Welcome to Health Hats, empowering people as they travel together toward best health. I'm Danny Van Leeuwen, a two-legged, cisgender, old white man of privilege, living in a food oasis who can afford many hats and knows a little bit about a lot of healthcare and a lot about very little. Most people wear hats one at a time, but I wear them all at once. We will listen and learn about what it takes to adjust to life's realities in healthcare's Tower of Babel. Let's make some sense of all of this. Watching acrobats and cheerleaders create a pyramid thrilled me as a child. They look so calm, confident, and strong. I could never do that. Yesterday, I was on a Zoom call with my podcasting fellows, helping each other puzzle through technical, business, story arc, and life challenges. I left the call with the image of those acrobatic pyramids. We podcasters are standing on each other's shoulders. I was part of that pyramid. 67 and disabled. I can do it. We are calm, confident, and strong together. I'm pleased to introduce you to Teresa Wright Johnson. Teresa is a multiple sclerosis warrior and congenital heart disease survivor. A retired parole officer, Teresa uses her life experiences to inspire and inform others. When I met Teresa at the Healthy Voices Conference in May, I felt her appreciation of and contribution to the pyramid of healthcare advocacy. I heard her warm, confident, and compassionate voice. Teresa tells a great story. Let's listen in. I'm here now with Teresa Wright Johnson. Teresa, how do you introduce yourself when you go to a social engagement?
I say, hi, I'm Teresa Wright Johnson, and I am a heart that matters.
You're a heart that matters.
Yes.
I like that. So there must be a story behind that.
There is indeed a story behind that. I was born with a congenital heart defect. I had an aortic valve defect.
Okay.
So for my entire life, I've been fighting and thriving with heart disease. Years ago, my parents spoke into my life that I had a great big purpose. But as you're growing up, you don't really understand what that means. But as you reach many heights and as you go through the ups and downs of life, and as you mature and really become comfortable with who you are, that unfolds and it expands. When I tried to think of something that encompassed my personality and my journey and my life work, a heart that matters is what came up.
Where were you when you first realized that health was fragile?
That's a tough question. I'm going to tell you why.
Okay.
As a child, growing up with a disease, you feel different.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, my peers used to be able to participate in certain activities. I wasn't able to do so. I think I've always felt different. But when did I recognize how important health was when I had to have my first open heart surgery.
Oh. How old were you?
4 months before my 13th birthday.
Okay. That was your first surgery, or is that the first surgery that you remember?
That was my first open heart surgery. Because now remember, heart disease and treatment didn't look like back then what it looks like today.
Okay.
So years ago, and I'll be 47, I'm 47 actually, years ago, treatment wasn't what it was. Treatment was very passive. It was a watch and wait. We know something is wrong. We don't quite know what we're going to do yet, so we're just going to watch it. You know, and again, it's just been so enlightening and transformational to see how science and research and technology has changed and has impacted mm-hmm. the quality of life for kids growing up with heart disease, mm-hmm. as well as adults. But it was at that moment, it was during that time that I really realized, wow, I could lose my life.
Oh.
That's when I recognized my mortality.
Wow. That's pretty sober at 13.
It is. It's really sobering at 13. But again, I have to talk about my faith and my family. You know, I had a whole village surround me. I believed that I was going to make it through that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my parents prayed me and believed me through that. And I had a church family. I had friends, siblings. I just had a close-knit group that supported me through that. But I also realized that's when the transitional, where the internal transition occurred. Because that's when I said, oh, my God. This could go either way. And actually, my surgeon spoke that. He said, you know, this could go either way. I'll never forget those words.
Mm-hmm. You must have either you had limited function, then it got worse. That's right. When it's okay, now you need surgery.
Right. I remember that very day. Year after year, of course, I would go for my yearly checkups. With my cardiologist. And then this particular year, we went for my regular checkup. And right away, I knew something was wrong just from my doctor's face and his thorough examinations. And mm-hmm. I've learned to read faces. Mm-hmm. If you talk to other adults who had illnesses as children who grow into them, they probably would say the same thing. You kind of learn to read faces, and I just knew something was wrong. But it was at that visit that we were told, we really have a problem now, and this problem is too big for me, and mm-hmm. I'm going to send her to this great esteemed hospital with these great doctors. And that was when it changed. My heart health changed.
Mm-hmm. So you're a person who has really taken charge of your healthcare. You're 47 years old, and right. you're clearly in charge of your health. But I'm thinking that was a transformational process. When you were 13, you're part of this family and church right. community. I would imagine that you were not as much in charge as you are now.
Right, of course not.
So can you tell me a little bit about that evolution that you made to take charge yourself?
Yes. Like you said, at 13, I did not have the maturity or the knowledge to take charge. I was still a minor. Mm-hmm. But the one thing I know that this journey has taught me and that my parents laid the foundation for was that I know my body, mm-hmm. listen to my body, honor it, mm-hmm. and the words you just used were the same words they used, take charge of my health. Mm-hmm. So that grew into who I am today. So let me just explain this.
Yeah.
Even with my limited activity and 13 years old and going through adolescence and those things, even through those processes, I knew that my body needed extra special attention.
Okay.
I accepted that. But I have to say, I did not really take charge or become so strong in advocacy probably until about 6 years ago.
Really?
Let me correct that.
Or okay.
Let me explain that.
Yeah.
So I've always been an advocate. I've always shared my story.
Okay.
But when I realized that my story could effect change on a greater scale.
Okay.
That's when everything in my world transitioned.
Okay. So say more.
Right. Going through this process, I would talk to other children. I would talk to other parents, mm-hmm. you know, and it was just personal and it was just the one-on-one.
Okay. Okay. So I had this experience.
Right. Friends or family knew someone that was going through something. They would direct them to me and we would talk or things of that nature. But I have to say a very pivotal moment for me when I recognized the power of my voice. I had began volunteering with my local AHA, American Heart Association. Mm-hmm. From my volunteer work, I was appointed to a committee, mm-hmm. Go Red Committee. Mm-hmm. And then I was asked to speak at our Go Red luncheon and share my story. And that was one of the most pivotal aha moments that occurred in my life for this reason. Speaking my truth and then watching everyone in the audience and connecting like a real spiritual connection mm-hmm. with the people who were there led me to know that this is the work I have been set aside to do.
Okay.
After that was over, I had so many people come up to me. And it was then that I realized that I say that this is my story, but this is the story of many.
Okay. Okay. Let's go back to 13. Mm-hmm. And if we think about what does it mean to take control of your health, the things that come to mind for me are sort of nuts and bolts, managing your medications, your appointments, eventually your insurance, your life habits. These are all pieces. There must have been an evolution of those things where your parents and your community were like guiding you.
Oh, absolutely.
But then you started either seeing it differently than they did, or this is mine to deal with. So how did that evolve?
So thank you, Danny. Right. Going through my adolescence and teen years, I had a very open relationship with my parents. We always talked about my condition.
Okay.
What was always important was health insurance.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Because of my condition. And not even only my parents. I have to say my doctor, my childhood cardiologist also spoke about these things to me. So I believe that I matured a lot faster than some of my peers because the things I had to think about, they didn't. In reference to careers, I had to think about a career where I would have good medical insurance and that would mirror the inside of what I wanted to do with my life. Mm-hmm. I come from a family of public safety and government workers and, mm-hmm. you know, elected officials. Like we are service worker, you know, we service. Mm-hmm. Service has always been a big deal in my family. And growing up, my parents were humanitarians and I had to give back and I was taught to give back. So as I'm transitioning through these years, I'm thinking about what my life is going to be or the choices that I make now and how they can impact my life. Mm-hmm. I had to watch my diet. Mm-hmm. I had to watch my lifestyle, my patterns.
You couldn't go out and get drunk with everybody when they were out drinking. Right.
So, I mean, I had a little bit of fun, but not that much. No. You understand? Yeah. I always had to have that in mind. And to this day, I tend to think more critically of everything that involves me. Mm-hmm. Because growing up, I always had to come from that perspective that, okay, Teresa, you have this and you have this and you have this. Mm-hmm. So it makes you much more careful.
Yeah.
But it makes you careful, but conscious and confident.
Yeah. So confident. So that's interesting. So confident meaning that you could see that you made a decision. And so made a decision to have a little bit of fun instead of a lot of fun. And then you could see, well, this is all I can really handle in terms of quote unquote fun, then okay, I made the right decision, which gives you confidence.
Right. So that's the big issue that I want to talk about.
Okay.
Because I don't know who's going to listen to this and how old they are or what they're going through, but this is something I want to talk about. When you grow up with illness, self-confidence is something that diminishes, or it can diminish mm-hmm. while you're going through those adolescent years. Mm-hmm. Because again, you feel different.
Mm-hmm.
And what we as a society, I think we need to focus more on is embracing differences.
Okay.
So where I came from, this foundation of telling me I'm different and that's on purpose, there are other people who don't understand what difference means.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, different, sometimes people can say different and you feel defective.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
That's huge. That's huge. I noticed that as I grew into my adult years, I really did struggle with confidence. Mm-hmm. And self-esteem issues. And it wasn't related to who I thought I was internally. It was related to what society told me I was supposed to be and what okay. I was supposed to look like. Okay. It was totally illness-induced.
Okay.
And now, a quick break to hear about our sponsor, Abridge. I see many clinicians on a regular basis, way too many. I'm appalled at how little I can remember when I get home. My wife asks me, what did she say? What about this medication or that test? I'm happy to remember half of it. To help me remember everything, I downloaded a new smartphone app called Abridge. Now, when I talk to the doctor, I ask if it's okay to record our conversation. Nobody has said no yet. I push a big pink button to record, and after I'm done, the transcript from our audio appears. Not the whole thing, that's too much, but sections around medical keywords like fatigue, pain, tests, exercise, meds. Now, when I'm done, I can share my visit with my wife, and she can listen to exactly what the doctor said. Abridge was created by patients, doctors, and caregivers. Check out the app at abridge.com. ABRIDGE.com. Or download it on the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. Record your health conversations. Let me know how it went.
Let me take this in a slightly different direction.
Sure.
One of the things that I think you're talking about is how people learn to be in charge of their health.
Right.
And you learned it because your family and your community gave you a foundation of it,
mm-hmm.
and you sort of had to, because
right.
if you didn't, it would be the right. end of things. There's only so stupid you can be, mm-hmm. and I don't mean stupid. So then you're talking, which I think is really interesting, is there's this quality of self-confidence
Absolutely.
That it's a lot harder to take charge or to learn about taking charge if you don't have self-confidence or you feel like you're down instead of up.
So that's an interesting comparison. That's not my story. That's not what I'm trying to say. So let me explain about taking charge.
Yeah.
Taking charge at 13 meant making conscious decisions,
mm-hmm.
right? And if I was a 13 or 14-year-old or 16-year-old who did not have heart disease,
mm-hmm.
maybe a lot of choices I made would have been different.
Okay.
But when you talk about self-confidence, I'm just talking about the internal transition
yeah.
that right. goes on as you age and you come to not only realize, mm-hmm. but accept mm-hmm. your illness. That's the major point. So whenever I talk about self-confidence, I also talk about acceptance.
Okay. But I'm sure when you're working with other people, right. so whether they're young people or adults,
right.
that you can see here's a person that is coming from a place of self-confidence, or maybe they're not. And so your approach to coaching them or the stories you tell may be different because they're starting from a different place. How do you like calibrate yourself when you see, oh, this person in front of you, whether they're have a serious chronic illness or not, there are people with serious chronic illnesses that have right. no confidence in themselves. It's a different advocacy and coaching problem if they do or they don't.
Right. It's a different coaching problem, but it's all under the same umbrella.
Okay.
If it's the child I'm speaking to, and I have done some activities where I have shared my story with adolescents and children, mm-hmm. and my first point of reference is always that you matter.
Okay.
You're here. You matter. You're here for a purpose. Mm-hmm. Life is going to throw some things at you. It may not be illness. It may be some other form of adversity. Mm-hmm. But guess what? You are strong enough to make it through, mm-hmm. and you will make it through because you matter. So I start from the point of reference where I'm empowering. My first point of reference is to empower, to let them know that you're here for a reason. And that's the same thing with adults. So when I meet someone with chronic illness, when we talk about our illnesses, I say, this is really hard. Mm-hmm. It's really difficult. But guess what? We're getting through this. Mm-hmm. Some days we don't know how. Some days they're easier than others, but we're doing it. Mm-hmm. And the reason why we're doing it is because we don't have any other choice. We're fighters. We're mm-hmm. thrivers. Mm-hmm. We're survivors. Mm-hmm. So whenever I speak, I come from a place of empowerment mm-hmm. because to me, that is important. If you can empower someone mm-hmm. and if you can show them how much power they have, mm-hmm. then they automatically will feel that and they will take that and they will show up in the world the way their vision or you know, in the manner they was created to show up and share.
So in a way, you're laying a foundation as an example.
Absolutely.
So that, okay, that's interesting. You're modeling it for them. So your words will have some impact and your modeling will have some impact as well.
That's my hope. Right. Okay, that's okay. My hope is to educate and inspire. Mm-hmm. I'm not a medical professional, right? But I am an advocate. Mm-hmm. I have lived the life I talk about.
Okay.
I live with disease. Mm-hmm. And we know experiences that we with chronic illnesses have can't be taught in a textbook. Oh, lived experience. Right, and when you live something, your story is different. Mm-hmm. The way you show up is different. Your impact is different. Right now, what's important for me and what I want to leave in the world is my legacy. Mm-hmm. The legacy that when I met Teresa, or when I saw Teresa, I felt good about myself. Mm-hmm. I felt that I'm here for a reason. She reminded me that I was here for a reason.
You're planting a seed, and that seed might not sprout the Absolutely. Minute you have an interaction. They may go another week or another hour or another year, and all of a sudden, bang,
uh-huh.
it's a sprout. And, oh, I remember talking to Teresa. Okay.
Absolutely. And that is so correct. That has been a point of reference in my professional life. Mm-hmm. That has been unveiled in my personal life. Danny, we never know the way a person impacts us.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You never know when the words you speak may manifest into someone's life.
That's so interesting. You know, when in my career I've been a boss, often staff has said, but I said that like 3 weeks ago, or I've been saying that for a year. And I have say to them, well, congratulations. It has finally sprouted. Right. So just because you had a good idea doesn't mean the ground was fertile yet. Right. So let's just celebrate that it sprouted now.
Absolutely.
So it's sort of a patience and having a longer look. That's so interesting. So I'm big on how do people learn to take charge of their health, be CEO of their health. And there's people like you and me that it's all we know. We're wired this way and we've refined it, but we started with a good base.
Right.
There's the other extreme. There's people that are, you know, just give me a pill. They don't even know that it's possible or it would be beneficial to them. So if you come across that end of the extreme, are you thinking planting a seed? Or what's going through your mind when you see, oh my goodness, this person is nowhere on this spectrum?
So what goes through my mind is, what can I say? What can I leave this person with?
Mm-hmm.
The one position that I won't operate from is a place of judgment.
Okay.
What can I do? What can I leave this person with? Mm-hmm. So that has occurred in my advocacy.
Yeah.
That has occurred. I have met people who have shared certain stories with me. They had a difficult time making lifestyle changes. I had a few tell me they just didn't want to. Mm-hmm. So what did I do? You know, I had information there. I told them a little bit about my story, and I told them change is hard. It's hard for everyone. Sometimes small steps are what lead to pivotal moments. And, and I tell them, and I say this because this has been true in my life. I didn't get where I am all of a sudden. I'm here because all of the small steps that were taken prior to this moment right now. And what I tell someone when they may not be as confident in their journey or when they're not as confident in their advocacy, or when it looks like to us they just don't care about themselves, that's a hard call to make because I don't know where people are in their lives. I mean, there are some people who are, you have to figure out how your bills are going to be paid.
Right.
So, you know, you have to figure out families. There are always circumstances that may make someone react differently to their situation.
Yeah.
So that's why I said for me, it's important to remove judgment or to remove my thought of how I think someone should react, because that's not my place to do.
Right.
I'm just the messenger. I'm just the vessel. Oh. The only things that I'm armed with are information and my life living with disease.
Yeah.
And like you said, at some point, that may come back. And or when something happens in their life or something changes the trajectory of how their life was going, they may come back. Mm-hmm. You never know when someone is going to come back.
Right.
You and look or listen or reach out.
You're charismatic and you're well spoken. And then there's people who, again, they don't have self-confidence. They feel or they are oppressed, or they're not accustomed to communicating in the scary world of healthcare, which is tremendously intimidating. Even when you are charismatic and well-spoken, it's still intimidating. I guess that's what you're saying, is that there's so many different circumstances and you're not judging. I think that not judging is really important. Actually, I think that's really hard. I can't help it. Like, if sometimes I feel like where my prejudices are when I judge, It's not about race. It's not about sexual orientation. It's, why don't they speak up? You know what I mean? I think that's like, it's not easy.
Right. And to your point, everyone is not comfortable speaking up. Mm-hmm. And that's why we are super important in this journey, because we speak mm-hmm. for the unspoken.
Okay. I'll say more about that.
We speak for the unspoken. I know people right now who are struggling with certain issues and certain illnesses in life. Mm-hmm. They need resources. They need to be connected to services. Sometimes they're sick. When you're mm-hmm. sick, it's hard
right.
to connect and reach out. As advocates, we are empowered to stand in the gap.
Okay, I see.
We are empowered to stand in the gap. So what I do is I try to connect whoever I can to whatever resources mm-hmm. they may need. Mm-hmm. I try to empower. Here's the bottom line. You can give someone the tools. It's not a guarantee.
Right. They still got to do it.
They have to do it.
Yeah.
But when it comes to speaking up or speaking out, what's more important to me is that even if you are not ready to speak up, that you're spoken for. Mm-hmm. That you're not ready to take one as tech and you can't speak up right now. But guess what? These services are available because somebody has come and has done that. Those are the things that's important. I've met people on every end of the spectrum, just starting out in their advocacy, just finding their voice. Mm-hmm. And again, here's where the transition comes. If you have not yet found the power of your voice, and if you haven't really found the point of your existence or that moment mm-hmm. that changes your life, mm-hmm. it's going to be hard to step out mm-hmm. and speak up.
Right, especially if you feel like crap.
And when you feel like crap or when you're unsure. Some of us are just unsure. Some of us are unsure of where we are. Mm-hmm. At this point, some of us are just trying to survive illness. Mm-hmm. We're just trying to get through the days.
Mm-hmm. A quick break to plug myself. See the show notes or my website, www.health-hats.com, and click on blog podcast for more information, to subscribe, or contribute. If you like it, share it. Thanks.
I'm really aware that I'm an old white man of privilege, and I'm health hats. So I'm a clinician, I'm a caregiver, I'm a patient, I'm an informaticist. So I wear all these different hats. So I get invited to, or I invite myself to sit at a lot of tables. And I feel like that part of my practice, my ministry, whatever you want to call it, is to open seats
right.
for people who have less of a voice than I do. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. because I'm a smart guy and I'm charismatic and I know a lot, but I just have this one experience. And I don't speak. I speak for myself. And I try to, you know, be aware of other voices, but I can only do so much because those experiences aren't my life.
Right.
I feel like my job, being a person of privilege, is to open doors and seats and whatever for other people.
Right.
And to expand the voices that are Absolutely. Out there and the experiences. So how do you see bringing in other voices in your work?
Number one, let me put it out here first and foremost. I am a big advocate of diversity and inclusion. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about a seat at the table, mm-hmm. yes, I'm always fighting for mm-hmm. and I'm always pushing for a seat at the table. Mm-hmm. And there are some seats that I am sitting in that wasn't easy to get here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm a fighter. Now that I'm here, now I understand I am charged with being that voice.
Okay.
With inviting people in.
Oh,
with
okay.
This message, with taking this message to whoever needs to hear it in my community. My community is my race. It's my gender. Mm-hmm. It's my illness. It's my community. Mm-hmm. So when you have a seat at the table, the conversation changes.
Yeah.
You cannot say a person or an organization or a company cannot say they support diversity and inclusion if there's no one there that has a seat at the table. And that's impacting the change. Healthcare is not only pertinent, it is a necessity. Having people's differences, their differences respected, their illnesses addressed, and their voices heard. Those things are pertinent. And if I myself as an advocate can't go out and stand up for myself and who I am and all that I represent, then I'm doing a big disservice to myself.
Okay.
Let me explain this.
Okay.
We're not superheroes. We're not. We're just people living with illnesses that's just trying to effect change. One step, one day, one life, one word at a time.
Okay. Oh, I like that. Yeah, yeah, right.
That's the meat and potatoes. We're not superheroes. We don't have capes on, and you know, we may not save the world, but what I learned throughout my career and throughout my life is if you can reach one, then you've done your just due, because you never know who that one is going to reach and who that one that they reached. You just never know where the impact is going to stop.
Yeah.
So, you know,
the ripple of it. Yeah.
The ripple effect. So, you know, to summarize your summarize your point, yes, diversity and inclusion matters. As a woman, as an African-American woman, there are times that I've been shut out of conversations.
Yeah.
There are times that I've been excluded. But guess what? I still come back knocking. I'm going to come back knocking. I'm going to come back talking until you listen to what I have to say. Because none of us got here on our own. We all stand on the shoulders of someone else. And when I think for me, when I recognize that, when I recognize that my life is not by accident, when I recognize that I lost siblings when I was the only child born with an illness, when I recognize that and put that into perspective, I realize that nothing in my life happened by accident. That is all intentional. And while I'm here, I'm going to live the most intentional, best life that I can. Because as my childhood cardiologist said, who's no longer here, he's no longer with me, but I remember as a little girl, he said to me, "Leave your mark in the world, kiddo." Those things are what stick with me. Leave your mark in the world, kiddo. My mom, you were different. I knew you were different. I knew my baby was different.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, you are a survivor. So it's these things, when you see my passion and when you see my inspiritedness, this is why these things have really transformed my life. And we didn't talk about this, but, you know, I have multiple sclerosis, too.
Okay.
So now I'm dealing with two chronic illnesses. And it gets difficult at times. It does. But then I go back and I remember, just as you and I just spoke about, I remember those words, those seeds that were planted. Those were the seeds planted in me.
Teresa, is there something that I should be asking you that I'm not?
No. I mean, I'm following your lead, and this is a great conversation. I just, if I can put this into the atmosphere. For whoever listens to this, I want them to know, or I want to say, you matter. You matter. Your voice matters. You're intentionally taking up space. That's not by accident. And it's there's no harm in asking for help if you need it. There's no harm in reaching out. With chronic illness, it takes the village. And only you can advocate best for yourself. You know your body. You know what you need.
And you know your circumstances.
And you know your circumstances. I think that's the most important point I can make, is that you matter. And you know best your body. And when your body tells you something, then listen to it.
Is there anything you'd like to ask me?
Sure. What has been your greatest, I hate to use the word accomplishment, but for the lack of another word, accomplishment in your years of advocacy? Or what are you most proud of?
I'll tell you what, that's a big question. So I'll just say what is the top of my mind at this minute. I've been doing merit reviews for PCORI, the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute, for a lot of years, like since 2013. And when I first started doing that, the proposals would have $25 gift cards for patient stakeholders, which just to me was an insult. About a couple of years ago, a proposal that I reviewed came that they budgeted for respite care for, so people who were caregivers could participate in the research. And I thought, okay, now this is putting your money where your mouth is. Thinking about what does it take for people with diverse experiences and viewpoints, what does it take for them to sit at the table? Well, if they have responsibilities, that those responsibilities are taken care of for a half a day or a couple hours full day. And I just thought, I don't know whether it got funded or not, but I thought, okay, we've come somewhere.
That's great.
Yeah.
So it's great that you say that. I also want to say this. As you know, I'm involved in a lot of organizations and a lot of advocacy platforms. But when you say research, automatically I think of iConquerMS.
Yes, okay.
Which I am a part of.
Yeah.
I want to say this, and this goes for both heart disease and multiple sclerosis.
Okay.
Diversity and inclusion in research is a must.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's number one. Number two, how do you get it done? Just as you said, sometimes you have to meet people where they are. If you are telling me that I matter, but I'm not being included in the research, then how can you say that you're diverse or inclusive? And, you know, if you are looking to invite me into the research, is it something that I'm going to connect with? Are there images that I can connect with? Do I see someone like myself sitting at the table? Because the bottom line is this, right? The basis of our humanity begins with connection. We are designed to connect. Without connection, without being able to speak to someone, to meet them where they are, what change are you effecting? Heart disease is the number one killer of women minority women are more disproportionately affected. Mm-hmm. So if I know this, but every time I look on my television, I see someone other than myself. Mm-hmm. Why should I believe you?
Right.
How am I going to believe you?
Right, right.
So, I mean, when we talk about research and diversity and inclusion, we're still chipping away at this.
Yeah.
We're still chipping away at this, but I do know myself and I know some other really great advocates that's chopping away and eating away at this platform. Because until we all are included and recognized, we're missing yeah. the work we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
That's just now this is all of this is my personal opinion.
Yeah. Teresa, thank you.
Thank you.
This has been a hoot and a half. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it myself. I appreciate it.
I'm glad we met.
I am too, and I look forward to seeing you and talking with you again.
Isaac Newton stood on the shoulders of the giants Copernicus, Kepler, and Galileo Galilei. Teresa Wright Johnson is a giant of advocacy. We stand on her shoulders. She stands on ours. You matter. Coming from Teresa is powerful and uplifting, even to me, a person of privilege, already full of myself. Thank you, Teresa, for all you do. Follow my blog, podcasts, and resources through my website. See you around the block.